Right. Sweet. Welcome back to Comedy or Worse. I'm here with my very special guest.
Oh, I said Ashley Amber.
Yeah! I like to not prepare the guest for anything.
That's great. I mean, I called him quick, so he's whatever. It's cool. It's good.
Yes, exactly. So how are you doing today?
Oh man, I'm tired as hell from that bike ride, I'll tell you that much. It's been a freaking pain not having my car working right now. So that's been a fun little adventure for me, but doing my thing still, trying to.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks for getting here early for the show so you can record this podcast.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's see.
Well, can I like swear and stuff, by the way?
No, you better not fucking swear.
Alright, okay.
Only the guest gets to swear. This is house rules.
I'll take
Where's
it.
Where's the swear
it.
Jar? I'm making money over here. Where's my drink?
That's what I like. That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, like, I try...
Freaking outlaws.
Yeah, I mean, you know, swearing to me is like, if you just take it away, then it's just like censorship.
For sure.
So yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Obviously go crazy, mm-hmm. But it is like, it is fun, and
I feel like it's like a little
more
garnish.
Creative.
Yeah.
Like to do jokes that aren't so F-word of any
time. I've been trying to do that. I've been trying, bad at it. I have a very bad habit of saying F-word, just as like, how often I say like. Like I say like, I'm doing that with the F-word now, and it's seriously losing its value in jokes.
That's not good. You don't want that.
Yeah, I can't. I tried to do a podcast a week ago, actually, and it was a no swearing one because they put it on the radio.
Wow.
And someone swore and we made fun of them for it. And then after we wrapped up, they were like, oh, yeah, actually, you swore like 3-4 times and didn't even notice. I was like,
fuck! Do you use a stage name or is that your real name?
Ashley Amber is my first and middle name. Yeah, my last name is just kind of hard to pronounce, and I didn't really want to deal with that, so.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't like when people mispronounce my last name, not because I'm, like, upset at the person, but because I legally changed my name, so it's my fault that people can't pronounce my last name. So, I feel guilty and ashamed. Why did I do this to myself? So, when I started doing comedy, I was like, yes, yeah, something else.
Maybe it's just change your legal name to Ashley Amber then.
I've been thinking about it, but it's a doozy. It's like over $100. You gotta get it notarized. You gotta get multiple copies and go to the courthouse. It's a serious undertaking.
Forget it.
Exactly.
It's not worth it.
Exactly.
Just have a stage.
Middle name, close enough. We'll see. Maybe one day if my life is easy breezy and I have no problems whatsoever and a lot of disposable income, if that day ever comes, maybe we'll get there.
Money is worth the money to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you get into comedy?
Kind of, I feel like, you know, same as everyone else pretty much, was watching it a lot for a long time. Like, I watched it a little bit as a kid, the Blue Collar guys, Larry the Cable Guy and all them, and Jeff Dunham and stuff. Like, I was into that stuff. I watched it with my parents when I was a kid, but, I got a lot more into it, I would say, in the last like year or two before I started. I was just watching it a little more often, and then like I had personal stuff in my life blowing up that was making me really unhappy, and I was like turning to it more as like something to like kind of relieve that like stress. And I kind of came to a head where I wasn't really happy with what I was doing creatively. You know, at the time I was doing like fire dancing and stuff, and I wasn't happy with that. And I was feeling like I wanted something else to immerse myself in, and this felt perfect. And it was here at the Madhouse that I had my first mic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. So was it in this room, the mm-hmm. Burn Room?
Yep.
Yeah.
Almost a year ago, actually.
Wow.
Precisely. Yeah, I think it was like right at the end of April or something, so.
Wow, yeah. You're doing great for a
I've been having a lot of fun with it, and I highly attribute how much I've been able to practice to Madhouse mics that have been going on, not right now, but a majority of the time that I've been in comedy, where I could come here 7 nights a week and do open mic stuff. I mean, I can't remember how many times I like did terrible in this room so I could get stuff ready and then figure out some good stuff for another main stage or wherever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is your writing process for comedy?
Ben Keldner asked me that like a week ago, and he's asked me this before, and I am terrible with his answer. I don't know.
Oh, this is interesting.
Sporadic is...
Sporadic?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I find that if I try and like sit down and like write stuff, I really struggle with that, where I'm just like sitting at a desk trying to like, you know, make the gears turn.
Right.
But if I kind of, I don't know, like go to something fun, have a lot of caffeine, and kind of like, you know, enter more of like a not work mode brain, then stuff just like comes up that I think is funny. I guess conversations with other people is a really good one. The only tough thing I feel like now is when it's like with other comedians, because then it's like, wait, are you gonna write about that? Or am I gonna write about that? And then it's almost like I'm thinking about it all the time when I'm talking to people, and it's like a little extra. But I've thought of stuff from like where I'm watching TV and stuff, like a character is doing something in a show, and I'm like, oh, that's happened to me before. This is what it looks like. Like same with like Instagram reels and stuff. I like that especially because it's so random sometimes, the stuff that comes up. So it's almost like a little like creative exercise in my brain.
Right. Well, there's social media. There's an algorithm.
Yeah.
So I don't know how random it is.
Yeah, I'd say it's like, you know, part random and part like stuff that does apply to me, which is kind of nice because then I'm more likely to find something that I can relate to well enough to write about it.
Yeah.
So I think that degree of like randomness versus an algorithm that's a bit of an echo chamber, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's just enough that it works for me.
Makes sense. They probably want to like expand or like test. Would they like this? You know?
And yeah.
It's like, oh, they do it okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely do that, yeah. And I'll be careful. You gotta be careful and ask sometimes. Like, you get like something random and new that you don't usually see, and you're like, I gotta get away from this quick or else I'm gonna see it more. Gotta be mindful.
So, let's see. Do you ever like hear like someone on stage and not like, you know, like just like a word or a phrase, and, or it's like a common thing, like, oh, and you're like, oh, I should use that. You know, it's not enough of their joke to like steal their joke.
Yeah, like that'll definitely happen to me with like crowd worky type stuff, or really just like any like engagement with the crowd, even if it's just like tags off of their joke, or if they respond somehow to one of your jokes, and then you can kind of build on that. That's a skill that I've been trying really hard to get better at, but I don't feel like I've practiced it enough. And the show last night here at the Madhouse, with Willie Mack and everyone else, they've been
the
so
weekend.
Good. Yes, the weekend shows, the wacky weekend, as we call it. Everyone's been really good at that, so I've been like really paying attention to watching people engage with the crowd, and especially when like on the later shows tend to be like a little more low energy going into it, as opposed to the earlier show. Watching people engage with the crowd and develop that like kind of rapport with them and get them more engaged. That's something I'd like to get better at. So I've been seeing, like last night, I think it was Kalen G, who would do like a great joke, and then like, you know, maybe there was people talking at a table or something, or there was just something weird with the momentum, but like people missed it. And he'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll just go fuck myself then, or something like that. But like the demeanor and the attitude and the delivery, like, he doesn't come off insecure. He's joking about it very clearly. And, you know, that would get like a big pop. And that's almost a cue for people to be like, oh, I should be paying attention because he's saying shit. And it's weird.
That's good. That's a good skill, Dom.
Yeah.
Do you ever like practice your jokes ahead of time just by yourself?
That's the main way that I get ready is, actually, yeah, because I take it out of my back pocket when I sit down. I have my set for tonight written out. And I try to just practice like everything joke for joke in order. I have a hard time with memorizing stuff. So I don't feel as comfortable with situations where I'm like, oh, the audience seems like they're responding better to this kind of stuff. Let me do different jokes than I was planning.
Right.
Because I know they'll like it. I might be able to do that for like a 5-minute set or something, but like for 8 minutes or more, I feel like I need to have the whole structure planned out. So you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword where I could probably benefit from some more versatility, but I do really like that practice that you're saying with just practicing joke for joke how you're going to do it all.
Yeah, also I find that I want to do it more, obviously, but if I have something and you record it just by yourself, and then you, or even maybe at first you're like looking at your notes, and you record it, and you're like, okay. Or no, when you look at your notes, you know you got like everything down. But then the first time you like stop looking at notes, then you should like immediately watch it back and see if you hit everything, because you don't want to practice stuff wrong.
Right.
And then like, oh, you skip the whole part later on. You're like, oh my God.
I
thought it's written down. Why didn't I do that? Yeah. So I find that helpful when I'm able to do it. And then also, what about, do you do a set and then later on watch it back and, like, and try to incorporate the stuff where you riffed or?
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially at open mics are really nice for that. That's like the probably one of the best parts about open mics is that there's less pressure. All the time I've taken stuff where, like, you know, maybe someone from the crowd like asks a question, and if, not saying I do this very often, but when it happens that something good comes out of the moment, absolutely, I'll add that to a set. I try to watch every single setback.
How much time do you wait to do it the right way, or day?
No, I'll do it the same night, usually, and just rip the band-aid off, depending on how the set is. That's usually what I'll try and do, is like, you know, chill in bed for a little bit, watch it for a bit, and then like have some more time to relax before I gotta go to bed. Because it makes me antsy watching myself, for sure. But lately I haven't been doing it as much, because I've been doing more like stage shows where I'm just doing material that I've had worked out for a while. But when I have newer material that I'm doing, then it's like definitely more of a priority for me to be like, how is this working in different environments?
So we probably met at the Mat House here, right?
Yep, had to admit. Yeah.
Cool. Have you ever like traveled for comedy?
I just did for the first time.
Nice.
Last week we went to Arizona, and that was sweet. Yeah, that was a new experience for me. That was me, Ben Keltner, Jack Spetz, and Melvin. He just started going by a different last name on stage, so I don't want to say.
So is that McKinney or something?
I think it is McKinney.
Yeah.
I'm not going to disrespect him. I'm pulling it up. Yeah, Melvin McKinney. All
right. Hey!
Melvin McKinney. We got it.
You know what we're doing up here?
It's all right. I can mess it up a little bit. I've had a new name before too, so I get it.
Yeah, there are people that are like, I don't know if they're purpose mispronouncing people's names, you know, sometimes. And it's like over and over and over. And then it's like the person like gets other people's names wrong. That is like,
yeah, it's weird. Like Ben Keltner will get like Kettner some places. Yeah. And it's like, it's okay. He's only been doing comedy in San Diego for like what? How long has he been doing? A long time.
I don't know.
What is it, 3 to 5 years now, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's like, that guy's been doing it a long time, so. Yeah. Long enough to get the name, I guess.
Yeah, there are people that are like, okay, have they been doing comedy longer than me? And I can say yes or no. They're not always right, because there's people that have, I forget that they stopped doing it, or they started somewhere else, or.
Yeah. Yeah, Jack gets that a lot. Jack's like, almost 5 years in now, but he just got here from Arizona 6 months ago, so not everyone knows that right away. But we had a great time over there, dude. We did one show that was kind of in Phoenix, not like Central Phoenix, but over in like the west side, like Litchfield Park area. That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of like friends and family of Jack's.
Oh, nice.
And he was really smart with how he set up everything. Like, I really can't say enough good things about how like intentional and thoughtful and like well done all of the like arranging of the tour was, like with who was going first on what night. Like, we all went first, second, third, and fourth on a different night, so we all rotated, and like the people he was working with to promote and everything, like he really knocked it out of the park. Got to go last during the show where a lot of his friends and family were there in Phoenix, which I think was smart, because all my stuff is so dirty that I didn't want to like kill the vibe right now, you know, like right away. I was glad that we got to do that one. And they really liked that stuff too. You know, there's more tension in the room, but they were willing to like work with me and stuff. So it's a lot of fun sometimes in situations like that. Yeah, we did Prescott, Flagstaff, and Lake Havasu City. And I actually grew up in Phoenix for the most part. Moved out here 5 years ago. But I wasn't sure how the shows were going to be out there because I've never done comedy in like not a major city. But people, like a lot of people came out and had a lot of enthusiasm and a really good time.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this, trying to use this podcast to promote live comedy. Go see live comedy. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you have like a hobby or passion that's not related to comedy?
You know, a while back I would have said like circus arts and fire dancing. I was really passionate about that for a long time, especially like fire eating and fire breathing. Those are my two favorite ones. Like I taught a bunch of people how to do it. I even got to teach some people how to do it in Australia for a little bit. Like I spent like a month out there just doing a handful of different workshops. You know, meeting a lot of really cool people through that too, for sure. You know, I do like stilt walking with that and like some like sideshow type tricks where I like put like a rat trap in my tongue, like stuff like that. Yeah, just like goofy stuff, you know, like shock value type stuff. I had a lot of fun doing that, and I wouldn't really say it's something I'm as passionate about anymore.
Right.
And this feels like kind of a lame replacement of a passion. Other than comedy, I have been working on my car a lot because it's been having problems and I've been having to fix it. Even though it sucks and it's stressful because it's my car,
right.
And I'm an Uber driver, so it's my job, so it's very stressful to be fixing that car. Yeah. Even with that, I'm still enjoying the process of working on it and learning about it.
Sure.
So I would honestly say I feel like I've been becoming like more interested in that as a hobby too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
But you probably would just stick to your car.
No, I would like to start like working on like cars in a shop or something. Yeah, for sure.
That would be less stressful to you?
Probably more stressful, yeah, because I don't want to mess up someone else's car.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have like a shop where it's like I'm not going to be the most experienced person there.
Right.
You know, versus
help you out.
Yeah. So you know, you have some oversight with that. So I don't know. I mean, I won't know until I do it. But yeah, I think potentially I could enjoy it. So yeah. Fortunately, I have had my neighbor who's a mechanic help me with some stuff while I'm working on the car, so that has taken some of the stress out of it, made it a more enjoyable experience.
Okay. Yeah. I used to work at a place where we taught people to become smog technicians.
Okay.
And that might be something you look into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, obviously it costs money to get training.
Yeah.
But then you get the training and then you pass a test.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, you're licensed. And then, you know, a lot of stuff that goes wrong with cars, like people are like, oh, my check engine light's on. Anytime you check engine light's on, that's related to smog. So a lot of people that don't have to take that, they just will do stuff they're really not supposed to do sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I also had no idea. I mean, my dad showed me this like, I feel like 7 years ago or something like that now. But you can just get like a little Bluetooth one off like Amazon. You just plug it right in.
Right.
Like, it seems like such a massive like barrier where it's like you gotta go to the Apple store or something. You know, like a problem like that where it's like they lock you out so you can't fix it, but like no, you can literally just get one. Like it's that simple. Like it's like buying a tire iron. It's like, yeah, you just get one. Like so you know what's going on. And you just Google the code, it tells you what's happening. Like
yeah.
It's so intimidating when you don't know.
But in the classes you learn like the code isn't the only thing. And mm-hmm. a lot of times like you have the hidden problems in between.
Yeah, because it's a symptom. It's not the whole
root
cause. Like, yeah, yeah.
They try to make it as clear as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, I never actually learned. I just knew the laws and stuff.
Right, right.
At the time.
That makes sense, yeah.
Anyway, that's a side note. Do you wish you started comedy earlier?
Yes and no, for sure.
Okay.
On one hand, I feel like I would have... I feel like I still would have, like, enjoyed it and, like, been as, like hooked on it, like, as I am right now. Like, I feel like I definitely would have been as committed to it if I started. I started doing circus arts when I was, like, 18. And if I started doing comedy instead then, you know, maybe I would have been just as into it then as I am now. But I don't know, because also having not done comedy and then starting at 27, I feel like I kind of have more like just like random different life experience to pull from. Not the
right.
Not the comedians who start them don't have life experience in the same way, but just like a lot more non-comedy related stuff.
Right.
Like I feel like I've had kind of a weird life in general. So
sure.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with starting this late. I think I probably would have been better off starting earlier, but I'm okay with starting this late. I guess I'll say that, yeah.
Alright, cool.
I'm at peace with it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you have no choice.
Right,
starting
yeah.
Starting when you started.
Yeah.
Let's see. But the circus fire stuff, you ever, like, learned to ride a unicycle?
Oh, no. Don't ask me about that, dude.
Oh, okay.
No, you can't. It's so hard. It's unbelievably difficult. Like, it's great, because, like, people will, like, see someone do like fire eating or something and be like, oh my god, that's crazy, how is that even possible? They see someone on a unicycle and it's like, that looks impossible to me, but people do it and I understand that conceptually. Like, I don't know, that's how I feel like looking at it before I tried it.
Yeah.
I've tried three separate times in my life where I'm like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna figure it out.
All right. But was it the right size unicycle?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, at this point in my life, like, I know plenty of people who do it.
Sure.
And okay. Stuff. And, like, I've looked at different tutorials and, like, Facebook group message boards of, like, here's how to try.
Let me ask you this. How many pedals could you do?
The best I ever got was I could start pedaling, like, I mean, I think maybe, like, 40 or something, like, a lot. Like, but just going forward.
Okay.
Going forward nonstop,
okay.
Much easier.
You can ride an inside.
I can just go forward on it,
okay.
But
you're on the right track.
It's yeah, but the difference between learning how to do that and versus not having like ridden a unicycle at all, so to getting there, that is like doable.
Right.
But going from that to what they call stalling, where they just go back and forth in place,
right.
Which is what you need to know how to do in order to like juggle on it.
Yeah. You probably already know this, I'll just tell this with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
The next step probably would be learning how to ride backwards.
Yeah.
Because you don't, if you just learn to go a little bit, then you're never going to be good enough.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know about for anybody that you or anybody that is like trying to learn to go backwards, it feels mm-hmm. like you're literally forcing yourself to ride into a brick wall.
Yeah.
Even though
it is, that's like, kind of how it felt when I was doing stilts backwards at first. That was a little bit scary, but
stilts backwards. I don't know if I guess I did that a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, you've been on stilts?
Oh yeah.
Tri balls or pedals?
Pegs.
Okay, sweet. Those are the cool ones. For anyone who doesn't know, drywalls are like what people literally use for drywalling, where it has really big flat feet. They're I think usually heavier and it's easy to stand still on. Which makes them a lot easier for entry-level people, but pegs are just that, like pirate peg legs on the bottom. So you can kind of spin around on them, but then you only have 2 points of balance. So you constantly have to like go side to side or something. Like you can never truly stand completely still without support. So it's way more sketchy, but they're way more fun to watch, in my opinion.
Yeah, like the stilts. Grew up in a court when we were teenagers, and we started like. Just this girl like got stilts out of the blue,
mm-hmm.
and it just started the circus war, you know. Like,
nice.
Then I got stilts, and we would like, you know, the stilts are like probably 6 feet tall, and
okay. Wait, so like, how far from like where your foot goes to the ground?
So there were holes like on both ends,
mm-hmm.
And you know, we quickly just had the pegs all the way at the top. You know,
okay. Oh, so you could put them as high as possible.
You just put them as high as possible.
I see what you're
where you could step on one, and then you would hold on to the highest one.
Oh, so you could put your hands on them.
And we were way down. I would be way down here, and the thing is like bending.
Yeah.
And we're just walking.
Yeah.
Fun, and then like.
That's funny.
It was a part.
That seems difficult.
Yeah.
The ones like, I had
you know,
were.
This is a competition, so we were like upping the stakes.
I've only done it with the shoes bolted in. And then the calf strapped on. So your hands free.
Right.
Doing it with your hands, especially the hunched over, that seems very difficult.
Yeah, and then like
there was a, in the court, there was a grassy area, mm-hmm. and we would walk in that, and then we would like go in the ground.
You sink.
So we would sit there and be on these stilts that are bending pulling ourselves out.
Oh god, yeah. So sketchy.
Oh yeah, we fell all the time. Look at it. I never broke them.
Yeah.
It was crazy because they were just like really flexible wood.
So scary. I've never seen stilts used that have any amount of give to them. I mean, I used mine for like, I mean, going on like 7 years now, and they've held up very well, but they're very bulky wood. They don't bend at all. They're heavy as crap. But yeah, man, that seems kind of sketchy.
That was so fun. And then was pogo sticks.
Dude, those are those seem terrifying too. I've seen people do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we looked up the Guinness World Record, and we were like, I think we like broke it, but you know, there was nobody there or something.
Were you guys doing tricks? Like, I've seen someone do like a backflip on that, and I'm like, that's how do you practice that without dying?
Never,
I don't get.
Never worked up to backflip. Maybe more like one hand, 1 foot.
Right, right.
You know, that'd be about it.
Could you do 1 foot on stilts? I don't know if that would work with that style.
No, because I think it probably would have actually broke. Because like,
right.
Both of them were bending so much.
Oh, okay, yeah.
All the
way
on just one.
Right, right.
I think we kind of had
a hop. When you do that, you get a hop, so it probably would have just. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have sucked.
I've
seen that happen to someone before.
Yeah.
I think the wood on the stilt just.
Yeah. The stilts were helpful on riding the moon cycle because we'd like take the stilts.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Like just kind of. Figured out.
Wait, so could you ride a unicycle?
Yeah, I can ride a unicycle.
Can you stall?
Yeah, of course I can ride.
What?
My best trick was I got up to riding and then dropping the seat and having it drag on the ground and
oh wow.
And just like murdering the inside of my
Right.
But it's just so fun. I mean, it's not good for the seat.
Sure.
Or like off the seat in front, riding with 1 foot.
Right.
I mean, I can't do that now.
I'm
working my way back up.
That's incredibly impressive, though. I mean, geez. Unicycle is. I have so much respect for unicycle.
Yeah, but there's definitely people who are better. Like, you look at them and you're like, well, crazy. Like, riding, you know, it's technically a unicycle has no seat and they're on a tightrope or something. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Damn.
That
seems like. Hard as you could do.
Yeah. They do on the slack lines or the tight wire or whatever. That's wild, dude. I know a guy who does that. He can like juggle on it while he's doing it, and it's like crazy impressive. And he's local here, but I think last I saw him on social media, he was like doing it in Dubai or something, like for work. You know, I was like, good for you, dude. I mean, you earned it. That's hard.
Yeah, and then it was fun to be on 6 foot. When I was in my 20s and could limber, I could. Run and jump up onto the 6 foot unicycle.
Yeah, that's the next thing I was gonna ask you because I've seen people do that too, and I'm just like, yo, that's crazy. Unassisted mount, just run and jump on. That's it's crazy to see in person.
It
doesn't look
like I tried it again, like years later, and I could like I just not flexible enough. No way.
Yeah.
It's like okay, now I'm like trying to kill myself.
Right. It doesn't look like it should work. It looks like a cartoon, like. The way it just kind of like swoop, like gets upright as they jump onto it. It's like, how does that physically make any sense? But they do it.
Super fun. All right, back to comedy. What are your goals in comedy?
Oh man. Right now, it's super early for me. So my goal right now is just to keep trying to get better. To keep enjoying it, you know? I don't want to get burnt out to the point that, like I've had a few like, moments over the last year where I know I'm working on so much stuff all the time that I'm almost like I'm kind of burnt out like this isn't really fun right now.
Right.
But you know, I think there's some amount of like healthy ratio where a bit of it is grind to get better, and then after that point when I can just kind of like perform ready material, it's like then I get to just enjoy it. So maintaining that balance so I can still enjoy it and continue to do it, but goals, I would say, trying to get better at crowd work and everything, and just like improv in general, especially if when I'm like hosting and trying to like break up like a tense audience that's not responding to just like written material, you know, so I can get people engaged. But don't know, it'd be really cool to do something at the Comedy Store in Hollywood eventually. I mean, it feels weird to even think about it like this early, but like, you know, that's something that would be really cool. I want to do another out of town tour again. That would be really fun.
But you've done the roast, right? Yeah, keep doing it. But have you been invited to Hollywood yet?
I don't think so. No. Oh, okay.
You would know if you did.
Yeah. No, because I think someone asked me to do one that's in like September or something.
Oh, is that in Hollywood?
Yeah. Let me look actually. I might even have it on my calendar.
Has so many things going on, just can't
remember everything. What can I say? No, I have nothing going on. My car's broken, so I'm like, sorry, I can't do anything. Oh, yeah. It's with... Oh, Joshua Loya.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, he won against me at the Comedy Store in... what month was that? That was just recently. That was still this month, March, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, I guess it was the first Wednesday of March. 2024, that's what we were in.
That's fun.
So that's so cool.
Yeah.
Guy, good luck.
Thanks.
I shouldn't have picked the blind guy. I don't know what. I just thought I was the best in the world. I can roast a blind guy and still come off the hero.
Right, yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how I'm going to approach it. He asked me to do it, though. I'll say that. I have a guy. But, I've done it in here before where, you know, because, you know, here in the Brick Room, when we're doing open mics, we have like, you know, 60, 70, 80 people some nights.
Right.
And I would say, well, I don't know, what would you say, like 70% of that is male comics?
Yeah.
Give or take?
Probably all the way up to 90 or something.
You're 90% male comics?
Depending on like what month it is, what time of the night it is.
Yeah. And then there's usually only like one or two trans comics. So when I go up there, it's, and I, so much of my material is like focused around trans stuff. Like, it's almost like I get like this refreshing, like different little thing that I get to talk about, you know? Like I almost feel like it's like a different kind of like privilege and stuff that like I have access to a different kind of material. And I get to come off different when I talk about it.
Sure.
You know? But, you know, if Joshua goes up before me, does a bunch of blind jokes, then I'm not special anymore. So I've literally said that. I've gone up here and been like, well, I'm trans, but I guess that's not special anymore after the blind guy, and, you know.
You could have something happen to your eyes, but, you know, not permanently. I'm still doing comedy. I'm blind right now.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. I'll find a way to blind myself before September so I can be the blind trans comedian. How dare you, you blind white man. Talk to me like that.
So, do you have like a favorite joke right now? Like, did someone's joke or your joke? Or?
Favorite joke of mine that I have right now is the joke that I have about the rapper Logic. Have you heard that one?
Yeah.
That's my favorite one. It's got a very different reception depending on where I do it.
Okay.
But I've found that I can kind of do it anywhere, more or less. And it's one that like, part of the reason I like it is because it's like more thought out from like a writing standpoint. Like right now I'm like almost intentionally not getting too analytical about how I write stuff. Like I said, when I'm like, my like process is like kind of more sporadic. Cause I think that tends to yield more like of a sporadic kind of feel for the comedy, like more like natural and creative kind of feel for things.
Yeah.
Versus more of like a formulaic kind of thing when it's too like, I would say like overwritten or overproduced feeling.
Right.
So, you know, trying to avoid that at first, I find helps me with different skills. If I want to do something creative, like just kind of mess around and do what feels cool for a while before I learn how to do it right. So I don't get stuck in the right way to do stuff too much.
Yeah.
That joke has a little more of intentional writing about it because I couldn't get it to work at first. Yeah. I'm having a hard time with it. And Kyle Drake and some other people gave me pointers on it, but Kyle Drake gave me the last like major punchline on it, which I wouldn't have thought to do. So that one's probably my favorite for that reason, just because the construction is a little superior to a lot of my other stuff, which is more one-liner-esque.
Yeah.
But it's also just a fun one because it's so like weird and dicey. Because it's kind of a race joke and it's kind of a trans joke. Like, the premise is, I'm trans in the same way that Logic is black.
Right.
Like, I have to tell you. Because he does, he has to tell everyone because he's, like, very light-skinned. And I feel like I have to tell everyone because I don't look super feminine. So that kind of, like, juxtaposition is kind of funny, but then I go into kind of explaining who he is for people who don't know.
Sure.
Like, especially in, like, Prescott and, like, we did, like, Lake Havasu City where, like, the crowd was almost, I would say, 35-plus was, and, like, white folk was 90% of the audience. So I started that joke up top, and like I think three people in the crowd knew who I was talking about and thought that was funny. And then most people didn't know who he was, but fortunately I get to explain it in the joke so it can kind of work for most audiences. And they still had a good time with it, so
well, that's good.
It worked, yeah. I would say that's my favorite one right now.
Sweet. Do you have like a favorite fan interaction, either you or a fan of somebody or somebody in the audience?
I'm trying to think, because if I had a favorite fan, it would probably be like just like some sort of like crowd work type thing would be my favorite. Oh yeah, there was this guy in here one night. I forget how we even started talking about it, but I was talking about like freeballing, like not wearing underwear with pants. And and it somehow came up that this dude in the crowd volunteered the information that he does freeballing in his jeans. And I had to be like, what, were you like in the army or something? Like, why would you even think to do that? Like, it seems so uncomfortable. You're just like, no, I just grew up poor. It just made me look like a total asshole. So I had to like kind of work around that and have fun with it. I don't remember what I said. I'm just like, how am I supposed to make that funny? Like, how everybody like laugh at the poor guy? Like, fucking poor piece of shit. Like, can't even afford underwear. Like, I don't know, something sarcastic. Yeah. That was a fun one. And probably more gratifying because I felt trapped at first. I was like, why would you fucking say that? Now what am I supposed to do? And it ended up kind of working out. Yeah.
What's your favorite place to do comedy right now?
It's my favorite place to do comedy right now. If I had to pick somewhere to do comedy again, I would honestly say like a medium-sized town. The show we did in Prescott, Arizona, might have been like the best like response I've gotten from a crowd. Like, they were just so, like, I mean, going into it, they were just really enthusiastic. They had so much energy, and, you know, I'm sure they don't get a ton of comedy there. Like, you know, we had local comedians that were helping us with it, but, you know, the scene out there just isn't as big as a major city. And the demographic was, again, like, 60 to 70%, like, 40-plus white people. And then, like, a handful of folks from, like, college town, like, type areas and stuff came out. But even them, like, you know, we had some, like, wasted college kids up front, which, again, drunk people, great for a comedy show. But they were being kind of weird, and, like, as soon as I started talking, they were like, wait, what? What is that type thing? And I joke about my voice, like, that's what my written material is up top. So, like, I got to have fun with that and kind of, you know, break that tension right away. And they responded really well to it. So I find that people that aren't like necessarily exposed to it as much, there's a little more tension, but when you break it, it's more payoff with that.
Yeah.
I would say honestly any like medium-sized town would probably be like my go-to if I got to pick like the next place I did set.
Oh yeah.
That's
cool. Yeah, as far as like trying to like relate to the audience and be like everybody else, like I just feel like I keep struggling with that. Like, because I start to go down that road,
yeah,
and it's tough for whatever reason, and then I just like stop doing it.
Yeah,
and I keep getting the advice, oh, you should try this. Like, okay, I get it. Yes.
Yeah.
But to me, like, it's just not fun. Like, I want to like, because like you really want to get to know someone. It's not what they tell you. It's how they see the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're gonna figure out how I see the world through my jokes anyway.
Yeah.
If you don't, you know, just trying to figure out like how to be like, make it as short as possible. Okay, I'm Aaron. Get ready to use your imagination.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Yeah.
You'll figure out what's going on either now or at home.
Yeah. Now's a good time to start being open minded. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because like you're not gonna remember anyway.
Yeah.
let's see. So, what was your family life growing up?
Oh man, they were weird. Bad for the most part. Weird. I mean, I don't know. Everybody was around, but like nobody was happy about it. Like, if that makes sense. Like, I'm trying to very carefully navigate the balance here of vulnerable to not too like uncomfortably like dark. They were like, I don't know, like my like. They were there for like important moments and stuff. Like my dad was the coach of my basketball team, but he was also like a pretty gnarly alcoholic. Like I have some jokes about that and stuff. Like I have a joke about how Child Protective Services came to my school like to ask me about my dad's drinking. And at the time he was trying to drink soda instead of beer, just as like a replacement for it, like mentally. And I told the CPS lady, like, oh, yeah, no, he switched to Coke. And she, like, freaked out. Well, like, that really happened. So, like, I think I was, like, 8 or something. I didn't understand. Like, I think, but then when she reacted, I think in my head, I was like, oh, wait, I've seen people talk about Coke on, like, TV or movies or something. Like, it's also a bad thing. Like, that's right. I forgot. Because I'm 8, I don't talk about Coke all the time. So I don't make that association.
No Coca-Cola.
Yeah, yeah. She fucking did not believe me either. Like, I could tell by the way. I was like, I fucked up. Like, I don't know how they maintained custody, but...
Maybe a drug test?
Yeah, yeah. They probably just... Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I guess it's...
Well, I'll have to ask my dad one day, like, hey, did you ever get drug tested? That might have been my bad. Like, so yeah, they were, and then like, I have an older sister and a younger sister, who like, they're, you know, they're really cool, but, you know, like our parents sucked, so we were never really like comfortable at home, so we were never close.
Yeah.
Kind of as a result of that. But I had a lot of friends, so I would go out and, not a lot of friends, I had enough friends to go out and, like, be other places most of the time. So, you know, that was, and then when I wasn't home, I was just hiding in my room playing video games most of the time. But, I mean, that's kind of how my life is now. Like,
right.
I live with one roommate, but my room's in the garage, he lives in an apartment. So I've got a ton of privacy and solitude, and I chill at home. And I come here and do comedy and stuff. And, you know, I go to work, and that's most of my life.
Okay.
You know, so.
What's like your earliest memory?
My earliest memory. Let's see. This probably isn't my earliest one. The first thing that comes to mind is when I was like, you know what, man? It's not a memory, but I have a story. And this is when I was still in diapers. Apparently, my dad was at work and my mom was home. And she had left me in the living room while she was in the kitchen. I don't know for how long. Couldn't have been that long. Because she was very surprised when she came back into the living room and found me playing with this toy school bus that I had. With a loaf of poop inside of it. So I could take the poop to school. Quote unquote, that was me. I guess that was my justification when asked about why that was happening, as well as a, you know, accompanying poop mural on the walls in the living room.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's first story I have. I don't remember that. I kind of wish I did because that would be hilarious.
So you remember it through your
after being told about it.
They didn't take pictures, obviously.
I wish they had, you know, I don't think they did, because I've never seen pictures of it. I feel like they would have shown me just to, like, guilt me.
Yeah.
I know if my kid did that, I would show them pictures, like, every year on their birthday and be like, this is how much I love you. Look, I cleaned that up. Yeah, and then, like, other than that, I think, like, for some reason, I can only remember right now, like, 7 or 8, which feels late. I feel like I should have memories from 5 or 6. Isn't that normal?
It just depends. Like, the earliest memory usually is, like, extreme one, either good or bad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we went to Disneyland, or, you know, or grandma died, you know. Or
yeah, yeah. I remember moving from, we were in Nebraska at the time. For some reason, we lived in Nebraska from when I was like 6 months to like 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And when we moved, my parents delayed it a little bit because they didn't want me to have my birthday without my friends. Makes sense, right? That's a good idea. Make sure I don't have a birthday alone in a new city without any friends around. However, their approach could have been done better because their idea was to have me have my birthday at school during lunch, so all my friends would be there, makes sense. And then they would take me out of school at like the conclusion of lunchtime, as my party was ending, they would take me out of school, get in the car where all this stuff was already ready to go, and we moved straight here on my 8th birthday. Like, who? You couldn't wait like 1 month. That's like breaking up with your girlfriend on Valentine's Day. Like, everyone knows, you just not on the day. Obviously not right before, because that would suck, but you also don't do it on the day. Like, that's worse. Isn't that like on the day?
Maybe they just was like, oh, we have to move today. All right.
Like, it's gotta be today, or it's gotta be the day before, or the week before, something like that.
So,
I don't,
yeah, so let's...
Maybe the money made it make sense. Hard. For real. Yeah. I spent the second half of my birthday in a van driving from Nebraska to Phoenix. Yeah. Really, I don't know why we did it that way. But it is very funny now to think about, like, them drawing that plan and be like, nailed it. That's it. That's how we're gonna do it. We got it figured out.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was weird. And that's also part of why I like, don't like Phoenix or Arizona very much, because like that was how I was moved out there. So from day one, I was like, yeah, fuck this. Like, I'm not about it. Yeah.
So how young were you when you first got like a phone or a cell phone?
It's in 6th or 7th grade, I think. Yeah, got a Motorola Razr.
Wow.
Yeah, I could take pictures. Not everyone could, but people could, but not could. So, you know.
So, do you have, like, merch?
You know, that's funny, because I was going to comment on how you're repping the merch tonight.
I always rep my merch. You never know who's going to be like, oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. You got the hoodie. You got the kicks. I know you have sweatpants that go with it. And you got the shot glasses. You got
the sweatpants, like, gotta, like, either modify them.
Mm.
Or they're not really sweatpants, because they're not, like, sewn correctly.
Yeah.
They're more, like, lounge pants, which, like, oh, that's pajamas.
Yeah.
I guess you're technically right.
Yeah.
At first I was like, no! And then I'm like, thought about it and looked it up. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess they're right. These are pajamas.
Lounge sweatpants versus like regular sweatpants? What's the difference?
Well, not lounge sweatpants. Like, pajamas are... sweatpants, like, the same material probably and everything. It may be the same cut, but there's elastic around, like,
waist and, like, so the ones you had didn't and, have the
and at the ankle it's like elastic,
right?
It's like holds in the heat.
But the ones you made didn't have that. They were like PJs.
Yeah, like I designed it and then some Printful prints them.
Okay, gotcha.
So, yeah,
that makes sense.
I wish I could just do this all myself. It'd be probably so much cheaper. I'd be able to
walk. Yeah. But that's one thing that like. When I was doing circus stuff, like, I did some work with it too, like, not a ton, but, like, maybe once every month or every other month I would go somewhere and I'd get paid to do circus stuff, but, you know, one big thing is, like, costuming, like, they have a certain way that their event's gonna look, so to some degree you gotta match that. It's easy if it's, like, you know, circus theme, so wear a freaking top hat and checkers or stripes or something, like, everyone's gotta have that stuff. But then there's always people who have like a really specific theme that you have to like either make or purchase something just for that. I wish I could have made stuff, but I've tried it and it's hard to get good at, I feel like.
Yeah.
I didn't have the patience to put the hours in to get good at sewing and threading elastic through and making stuff like that. So that's another thing I have a lot of respect for people that do it, for sure. But no, I don't have any merch. I don't know. I feel like, again, like it feels like I'm so early in this, but like if I had merch, I was, you know, on the road with those guys. We did 4 shows, and, you know, I could have brought some stuff to that.
Yeah, you could even just have stickers.
I don't even have stickers.
I would suggest, like, stickers and, like, donation pays, just make it easy. So, like,
yeah.
A lot of times when you say it's donation, you give you more.
Right.
Than you would even.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are going to be less, and some people are going to be more.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I feel like with stickers it would be easy to average, like, more than your cost going in, for sure.
Yeah, and you have different sizes, and it's easy to have so many.
Yeah. What do you think about a sticker of me and Logic, like, back-to-back or something? Or, like, an album cover type pose, but we're, like, cartoons or something.
That would be good.
You think that would be fresh?
Yeah, I did shot glasses, it's based off one joke.
Right.
And now I kind of regret
yeah.
that, because sometimes it's like, how am I going to sell this unless I do that joke?
Right,
it's not like I have a joke. It's just, I'm trying to like get more material and stretch.
Yeah.
I'm not going to always do that joke. Like Sunday, I was like, oh man, I should have done that. Or even the boys show, I should have done that joke.
Oh, okay, you know,
because like I tried to sell merch. I actually sold this shop last.
Yeah.
But I hadn't even done the joke. But I think the guy just was like, liking enough to just. Well, also he thought I was just going to give it to him at first.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, it's donation based. And he's like, okay. And it's like, he's going to walk away. I'm like, well, it cost me $1.
Right, yeah. He's like, at least give me $1.
So I didn't make any money on that.
That's fine. Wow. Wait, so he gave you $1?
Cash app, and he gave me $1. And the good part
that's
of that.
That's disrespectful. That's just pull the app out to send one to, I feel like.
Yeah.
I would feel bad if I was sending that to someone else.
Yeah, but you know,
You
can't.
Receiving, I'd probably still be like, thank you. You know, like it's something, like, you know.
I guess I feel like the good part was it forced me to like get my cash app in order because like I don't use that one as much.
Yeah.
So I think it was okay. It just was had like a bank account that I want to get rid of still attached to it.
Yeah.
So I like put my new bank account on there.
Yeah.
I have to finish that.
Like, yeah, that's how my cash app is too. Like I have PayPal, I have Venmo, and I have like Zelle, and then like people are like, oh, I only have cash app. And I'm just like, what is this fucking, how poor are you, man? Like get Venmo.
Yeah.
We have Metro PCS too. Like, you know, on Cricket, like dude, freaking get a real money transfer app. Like, although I will say cash app has a Bitcoin on it, which is really easy. So I had it for that for a little bit.
So people can send me Bitcoin.
Yeah. What kind of illegal bullshit are you up to that you need that? Use Cash App, primarily you're sketchy. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that though. Nothing wrong with being sketchy. I've been sketchy.
And then like Zelle, like I got it in my bank.
Yeah.
And then like I just Zelle's stopped fancy. Using it. And then they like warned me, like, oh yeah, you haven't used it, we're gonna just close your account. I'm like, okay.
That's so weird.
Whatever. It doesn't matter to me.
I don't know how or why that works. I feel like I never use mine, but I maybe like once a year or something I'll use it because like nobody uses Zelle. But I do feel like it's the fanciest one.
Yeah, it's the one the banks want you to use.
Yeah, and it's instant, it's straight to the bank, no third party app. Like,
right.
It's pretty, yeah, so. And people are like, you got Zelle? I'm like, oh yeah, I got Zelle, you know. Got a camera phone, I got Zelle, that's what it is.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know enough about it. But as far as cryptocurrency, I think I want XLM to like take off, which is like.
Is that a new crypto?
It's not new. It's the behind it is like micro lending and like really like other countries and like, you know, be able to easily transfer money without all the infrastructure that the banks all have now.
Right,
it's
right.
Decentralized. Yeah, like all good parts of crypto.
Yeah.
You know, to like help not just the shady, you know, like hide the money. It's more like for, I don't know, like, I don't know enough about it to really, but it seemed like if it takes off, it's going to help make the world a better place kind of thing. But it's not the only one doing it.
Right, right. I mean, there's pros and cons to it. I mean, I've heard that there's like a, you know, if you want to do like drug trafficking or something, then like the best way to do it is with Bitcoin or something because it's not in the banking system, so it's harder to like track and stuff like that. Like you can just like make any burner account on Cash App and you can send and receive from that one. And that somehow makes your logistics of getting money around on like, you know, or like, I don't even know if it's a thing anymore, but like Silk Road, familiar? Are you familiar with that? Oh, it might not be a thing anymore, but that used to be a way to buy all sorts of shit. Like, I don't know if you're mentioning it. Yeah. Because, like, I think it, like, blew up to the point that, like, people got in a lot of trouble for, like, receiving stuff from there. So I don't feel like I'm, like, blowing it up. But, you could buy cocaine on the Silk Road and just, like, send Bitcoin and they would just, like, mail it to you. And you could do it in, like, the United States. They would send you all sorts of shit. Like, oh, I'm gonna get some acid, like, yeah. I think you could get, like, weapons and stuff, too, like, all sorts of shit. Yeah. It's like, whatever you want.
Right. Yeah, I think with the cryptocurrency, like, mm-hmm. the problem is if you're, like, in the banking system,
yeah.
and then you're also doing that,
yeah.
then eventually you're going to, like, oh, shoot, I got to pay a bill. They don't take Bitcoin. I transfer it to my bank.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know? And then they're like, well, where'd this money come from?
Yeah, you know, exactly. So
you can somehow stay or have, like, separate funds that you only use for stuff.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Have some money laundering and shit. Some Bitcoin laundering operations.
Yeah, but then you're just probably just always going to get caught because they're like, well, why do you have five cars? How do you afford five cars?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't restore them or something, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, assets or something. Yeah. Yeah, I could never get away with it. I'd be way too stupid. I would have way too much fun with it. If I ever had, like, a ton of, like, illegal cash, I wouldn't like slowly launder it and then like spend it responsibly. Like, I'd be an idiot so fast.
Yeah.
Maybe I would get away with it though. I feel like I have pretty like I have a really stupid sense of like smart decision making, you know. But I also have very low ambition, so like I would just get like some jewelry and stuff, like some clothes, just like paying cash at the mall, you know. Maybe go buy a car in cash or something, and then it's like I'm chilling.
Yeah.
Although, I guess if I register it,
you could always just treat it like a retirement fund.
Yeah.
You don't.
I cannot do that.
You don't spend it until, you know, and then I don't know.
I feel like I couldn't. I don't think I could ever. If I had, like, so much illegal cash, like, if I had, like, let's say $1 billion in, like, illegally acquired cash. I don't think I could ever muster the motivation to cook for myself again. I would have to order it. It's like I never have to do this again, right. If I don't want to.
Sure, but this
so
is
how am I gonna choose?
You're not
to
like
do
flying to Paris on your private jet.
Well, how am I gonna stay home when I got $1 billion? I got $1 billion. We're going to Paris. We're going to Thailand. Why not?
I guess if you just hire the right people, you can just, you know,
yeah.
figure out a way to like make that money legit.
Yeah, I'll buy some passports, you know, and then
I'm a different person.
Yeah,
this person was born rich. There, that's how I got the money.
Yeah, exactly, dude. I'll be the Mamba number 5 on the airlines, dude. I'll be like, no, I'm Stephanie and Claire and Angela and just whoever I am on a different vacation.
Sure.
Let's get right around it, dude. Again, I don't think I would do well with that, so it's probably for the best.
I don't actually recommend it.
Yeah, I'm saying these are things I would do wrong and get caught.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we're not trying to help you. So it's about 7:30.
Oh, it is?
It starts at 8.
Yeah, this has been fun.
So we should probably wrap it up.
Cool.
I could talk to you for another hour.
Yeah, no, for real. This feels like it's been like 20, 30 minutes. This is nice. This is good.
Yeah, so you're always welcome to come back.
Yeah.
Well, first, like, how can we
Ashley Amber for real on Instagram and TikTok. Okay. Ashley Amber for real. That's Ashley spelled the normal way, not like Ashley Lekehe. I know that crap. AshleyAmberforreal, all one word on Instagram and TikTok.
Oh, yeah. And then, what's the wallet right now?
Like in general,
whatever,
like worldwide, or for me personally, whatever that means to me.
Maybe
the worst
Carlos.
Thing about comedy right now is he has fucking Carlos Figueroa. No,
it happens to be right there.
So yeah, it's just, you know, people that come in during podcasts and just fucking interrupt, you know, and just sit there,
try to be quiet and act like he's not here.
Yeah, yeah. They open the door and they see that you're in there, and they're like, "Well, I'll just sit here and watch this dumb fucking look on my face." And that's not going to affect anyone's performance at all. So I definitely say that shit. The worst thing about comedy right now, this is hard, I try not to think negative. I'm just such a wholesome, positive person that's never done anything wrong in their whole life. It's hard for me to think so negatively. But you
know, other people have done in comedy. That's
so that's actually the first thing that came to my mind was other people. No, I think there's so many of us trying to do it right now. It's hard for anyone to be successful. And that doesn't even necessarily mean like who's doing well and who's doing not as well. It's just a matter of like oversaturation.
Sure.
Like I, you know, went to LA for a little bit just to do open mics there.
Yeah.
And doing open mics in LA blows. It's only comedians. There's almost never people there to watch for entertainment value. It's just other comedians watching themselves, which is really hard to actually, I feel like I get like an organic response from what would be a real audience. So oversaturation, I feel like, is the number one thing that for me, if there was like, you know, 30% of the comedians active, like tomorrow, as compared to how many are active today, then obviously that would help everyone that's at it a lot, because there'd be a lot less saturation.
What about this? What about if we could have society appreciate art more and have like scholarships and grants for all arts, including comedy? Absolutely.
I think for certain arts it would work out. I think, yeah, once you get, I personally have always had a hard time with like art and money. Even when I was like actually like making pretty decent money per gig, not that I would get a ton of gigs, but I make a good amount of money per gig doing circus stuff, I had a hard time negotiating advertising and all that stuff. That's not where my head's at most of the time, so I have a hard time switching gears. But you know, the logistics of how to make it make sense financially is complicated. I don't know, me personally, my ideal scenario of...
You just get people to pay for comedy more.
I mean, yeah, that would be awesome. But if universal basic income is ever a thing, that would be awesome. Where it's like, if you don't get paid for your work, then you'll never have anything beyond like the absolute bare necessities, which with how much automation is involved in the production of all the basic necessities, I feel like it's very feasible, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. For me, I would be totally content with that, where I may or may not be successful enough to profit off of comedy frequent enough for it to actually make a difference in my like quality of life, right, but where I have at least basic necessities taken care of. Yeah.
Alright, cool. We probably should wrap it up.
Cool.
Is there anything else you wanted to say before we go?
No, this is great. I feel like we covered so much.
Oh, yeah.
Really awesome time. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, this has been another episode of Comedy or Worse. Bye, everybody.